And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to View from the Lane, our Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. My name is Jack Pitbrook and I'm joined for a special episode this morning by James Mort and Charlie Acleshare. Spurs are on their way to Wembley. They beat Brentford in the League Cup semi-final last night. Charlie, was there much of a sense of occasion at White Hart Lane?
Just firstly, what is funny, you saying Spurs are on their way to Wembley. When they were playing Aussie's Dream at the stadium after the game, I found it really funny when Sissoko was asked about it and he was like, oh no, I don't really know this song. And you could just imagine everyone being like, no, Sissoko, come on, pretend that you know it and that you love it and it means loads to you. I mean, it's hard for there to be a massive occasion without supporters there, but I guess, you know, them playing that song was a nod to the fact that it was something different. You could tell it meant a lot. I mean, I like the footage of Mourinho and his coaches celebrating after. There's the clip of Lucas kind of dancing around at the final whistle. I think it definitely means loads, but obviously with no one there to watch, it's slightly different. I guess as well, the nature of it, we talked about it on Monday, didn't we, that, you know, it was a game they were very much expected to win, and doing so in 2-0 makes it feel fairly routine. But there were some pretty hairy moments, and had that equaliser stood a few minutes before, then it could have been quite dicey. But as it was, I think they it was just a really solid professional performance, and it's such a nice bonus and thing to look forward to have a cup final on the horizon.
James, you must be buzzing.
Yeah, I am actually. Yeah, I'm far happier than I expected to be. I think that's come at quite a good time. If you're a Spurs fan, like facing the prospect of being sat at home for what, at least 6 weeks. It's quite nice to have a cup final sort of in the distance to look forward to. I don't know, obviously the thing has been moved to April, with the theory being that perhaps there'll be fans there by that stage. I'd be kind of a little bit more pessimistic about that. But I mean, obviously it's a great thing. I mean, it is mad when you think, you know, Spurs have been one of the most competitive teams in English football over the last like 6 years. Finished, in the top four times, I think. And yet they haven't been a domestic final since 2015. So it's quite significant. I mean, I know people will say dismissively that it's only the League Cup. And I think I've said that before. I'm not as interested in Spurs winning the League Cup as I would be the FA Cup or whatever, purely because it's been so long. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously a great opportunity to get to end that trophy drought. I mean, 13 years is obviously way too long for a club who would kind of profess to be a big club. So and obviously they'll face a team they've beaten in the league this season in the final, be it City or United. So, good opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, you really got the sense yesterday from Reno after the game that there is a lot of excitement. And clearly, as you say, James, it's 6 years since the domestic final. And, you know, it would be brilliant. It would be the start. And, you know, for Mourinho, all three times, you know, he won the League Cup both times at Chelsea and at United. And all three of those occasions, they won more thereafter. In fact, they won more that season thereafter on all three of those occasions. So, yeah, I mean, there's four of those occasions, because he won it twice, didn't he, at Chelsea in the first spell. But yeah, so, you know, I think everyone would feel like it was a springboard on something more. And Eric Dyer was talking about that after the game as well, how important it is to win a trophy. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really nice thing to have for the next 3.5 months to look forward to.
Charlie, Mourinho went for a really strong team, I think, which is what we predicted on the pod a few days ago. Kane played, Son played, Højbjerg played. How do you think those guys did? Did it feel like a normal kind of... Did it feel like a Premier League level game? Because it looked a bit like... I mean, the way that Spurs went 1-0 up and then were, you know, unsure whether to push for the second or not, then eventually got it. Like, it did look a bit like a Premier League game that Spurs had played fairly recently.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It wasn't wholly unfamiliar. Yeah, I mean, as you say, they kept the spine of the team. They made a few changes, but kept the spine. It was clear they were taking it seriously. It did have the feel, you know, standard-wise. You know, I thought Brentford were really impressive in a lot of what they did, and, you know, obviously they were really up for it. And Ndombele was really good. Sissoko was great. I really enjoyed his performance. You know, a lot of this season he's played in that defensive midfield role where he's often, you know, joined up with the centre backs to form a back six. The shackles were off a bit yesterday, and he, you know, he did more of what I think we associate Sissoko in his Newcastle, towards the end of the Newcastle period and the early Tottenham days, when he was a bit more box to box, and it looked like he was really enjoying himself. Scored the goal, made a couple of really good chances. And it's an interesting one. I mean, he did used to be far more that player. And actually, when he started at Newcastle, I remember his debut against Chelsea when he scored, I think, twice. And he was this kind of pacey winger almost. And it's interesting how much he's evolved. I did a piece on this last year, actually, on kind of how he's done that, but always seemed to be undroppable. And obviously, he has been rotated out. Winks has come in from the last few games. I wonder now if that tilts the balance a little bit more towards Sissoko. But what's great is when you have that competition for places, and it seems to be raising the level of the guys that come in. I also thought Reguilon played very well. Obviously, that cross was absolutely superb. Loved that. It's right in front of us. The sort of shape on it was just perfect. So there's competition there as well, and that's what you want. And I mean, we thought he would name a strong team because Marine is a nice buffer before Villa next week. But yeah, you know, I think it was very much a kind of ticking things along nicely, and Son again just scored his goal beautifully.
I completely agree about Sissoko. I Euro 2016 Sissoko was like that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Played out on the right, and France really found a way to maximise his speed and his ability to kind of run in behind and then get crosses in. He wasn't that different back then. He doesn't really look like a winger because he's such a big guy, but he was actually playing like a winger. And I quite enjoy watching him when he does that. Although he doesn't, to be honest, it's Tottenham the last 2 years, he's not done it that much. I enjoyed watching Ndombele a lot as well. I thought his pass through to Son,
amazing.
The second goal was great. That was a fantastic goal. Like, I love the way that Son kind of starts that run. Kind of nobody can see him really. It's kind of a classic third man run, and then he all of a sudden he's racing away through the Brentford defence. Ndombele perfectly weighted pass, and then the way that Son hammers it high past the keeper, that was a beautiful goal.
Such a confident finish. And actually, the Brentford manager said afterwards that they were really annoyed about the first goal. They thought there was some mistakes made there, but the second, he was like, look, ultimately that's two world-class players combining, and there have been plenty of Premier League teams that have been cut apart by them this season, so there's not really any shame in it. And I thought that was fair. I mean, it was just two absolutely elite players doing what they do best, and that finish from Son just spoke of someone with so much confidence. Just the way he waits for the keeper and just puts it, you know, way above him and out of reach. Really, really lovely goal.
That's somewhere that I think Son has really improved actually in the last couple of years. For me, like I don't think he was particularly good like one-on-one, like through with the keeper in his first few years. I can think of quite a few times where he'd get played through and he'd kind of overthink it and he'd dally, and then he'd get like either caught out by a defender, or he'd then, like, you know, the goalkeeper would narrow the angle or whatever. But now, you know, I didn't really have any doubt that he was going to score when he went through there.
Totally.
And it's not like he always has the same thing. He's got a bit of variation. Sometimes he'll kind of drop a shoulder and send the keeper and go around him. Another time, you know, he'll do what he did last night and hammer it like over the top of him. And I think having that variation and that confidence makes such a big difference in those situations. And he's just going to end up in those situations so often now, with Kane dropping so deep. It is amazing how often Son will end up being like the furthest player forward, and Kane will be like basically on halfway line, or, you know, and Ndombele will play him through like he did last night.
And then at the end, James, there was that flashpoint between Højbjerg and Brentford's Josh De Silva. What did you make of that?
I mean, I think in the cold light of day, actually, I think you look at it and say De Silva was probably almost a little bit unlucky. I mean, he's trying to do that drag back, isn't he? And then he slips and loses balance, and then, well, I suppose it's Højbjerg who's unlucky, obviously, but he plants his foot on Højbjerg's shin, break, like shatters his shin pad and leaves a pretty nasty looking cut on his shin. I mean, you can see why Højbjerg was particularly frustrated about that in the moment, because that is kind of, it is a leg breaking challenge, isn't it, if his foot is planted. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but you know, that could have definitely gone a lot worse for Højbjerg, and clearly he realised that when he went off, and he was clearly very angry about it. But I don't know whether he watched it back before the end of the game, because by the end of the game, when he was out talking to Thomas Frank at the end and they were having like a bit of a laugh and he had a massive smile on his face and stuff. So I don't know whether he had just calmed down or whether he had actually seen it and realised that it was all a bit unlucky. I mean, I guess once, you know, once the heat dies down a bit and you've calmed down, the red mist is kind of dissipated. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you kind of just, you're grateful that you've not picked up an injury there other than a little cut on your leg.
I was just going to say, it might have been, James, like the relief kind of washed over him as well, that he was okay and kind of the adrenaline wears off. And he tweeted this morning, you know, saying it was all good and he was fine. You know, just that Josh De Silva owed him a new shin pad. It was very classy tweet, clap emoji.
That I was going to say.
It was nice.
It was a really, really hashtag classy touch tweet from Højbjerg. Just great stuff all around. I am a Viking and I am fine, he says. But yeah, like looking at the bigger picture, Tottenham, like you said earlier, James, Tottenham in their first domestic final since Pochettino's first season. Do you think this kind of makes this is part of the payback for appointing Mourinho, isn't it? This is part of Mourinho justifying his appointment.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, that was the idea, wasn't it? That he was a man who was as going to come as close as you could possibly get to guaranteeing trophies. I mean, it is quite interesting because it's hard to imagine that Pochettino would have played as strong a team as that in a League Cup game. I mean, you know, we've seen FA Cup semi-finals under Pochettino where he's played Michel Vorm instead of Lloris. I know that frustrated quite a few fans, myself included, because when you've gone that long without a trophy, it feels like you play your strongest team once you get to the latter stages of the competition and you have an opportunity to win. I suppose the biggest difference is probably that Mourinho played a full-strength team and Pochettino probably wouldn't have done.
I do think the League Cup kind of crystallises a lot of things for Mourinho. It is a competition he has taken very seriously throughout his career when, you know, other managers perhaps haven't. And I was thinking of quotes from Pochettino in January 2019 when I think Spurs were knocked out of the League Cup and FA Cup in quite quick succession, and him talking about, you know, sort of playing down the importance of cup competitions. And I think, you know, there's an extent to which, you know, top four is, you know, more important in some ways, but it did come at a time where there was a yearning for trophies. And I think it was a bit of a misstep maybe. And obviously Mourinho's come in, as you say, you know, he's played strong teams. And I mean, I thought yesterday it was kind of incredible. And you know, this could be grist to the mill of those who don't like Mourinho. It depends on your point of view. But, you know, he finished the game 2-0 up against a 10-man team in the division below with Tanganga, a defender, as a central midfielder. Sissoko, who's generally played more as a DM, as a right winger. I mean, it was a real shutting up shop. Absolutely zero chances being taken. And that's, you know, that's how seriously he takes it, on top of naming a strong team to start with.
Is that not kind of showing respect to Brentford, who I think are like 16 games unbeaten, obviously one of the best teams in the Championship? You can make an argument that they were probably as good as, or better than, probably at least two teams in the Premier League right now, I'd say.
Maybe, but I don't. Would you feel you needed to be, if you were 2-0 up at home to Fulham and they had 10 men, would you bring on Tanganga rather than Dele for Højbjerg and just move Sissoko back?
Mourinho, like me, will still be thinking about West Ham, so that's probably why that happened.
Maybe, yeah. But I mean, it was... yeah, it seemed like a very, you know, zero chances being taken approach, and fair play. You know, why would you take any risks? But yeah, I just think the League Cup and all of that, it shows what Mourinho's about. He was asked about it afterwards, you know, what's his secret? Because he's on course to have won the League Cup. I think he's joint already for most wins by manager, and he can go clear. And he said the secret, if there is one, is taking it seriously. And you know, that's probably right. He is someone who has tended to name good sides. It's a competition that's had a lot of debate around it. I mean, going back to Arsene Wenger and Arsenal, and he, you know, him saying wasn't a trophy you'd have a parade about. And I think then Ferguson talked about it. So it's been something that's been going a while. But yeah, definitely taking the cup competition seriously, I think, will go down, is always something that will go down well with supporters. We've, you know, seen that Newcastle, there's a big debate over that as well, isn't there?
So, James, 1901, 1921, 1951, 1961, 1971, 1981, 1991. What's going to come next?
This is like Only Connect, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't understand that program, so I'm not intelligent enough, so I can't make a joke about it, really.
Are they going to do it? Are they going to are Tottenham going to bring their history back into line with?
I mean, you'd hope so, but I'm obviously old enough to remember 2001 and there being a lot of chat of how Spurs were kind of inevitably going to win a trophy because the year ended in one, and then getting to the FA Cup semi-finals and expecting to beat Arsenal purely because of the year, and then going 1-0 up and thinking, oh shit, actually, maybe this actually will happen, and then obviously losing. So, you know, I wouldn't say, I wouldn't bank on it, but obviously they've got a good opportunity given they're in the final.
Yeah, so we should say for any, if we've got any listeners who are not that well versed in Spurs' history, so Spurs did have a tradition of winning a trophy in every year that ended in one. This, I think, took them all the way up until 1991, where of course they won the FA Cup. Chaz and Dave did the FA Cup single about it. You should watch it on YouTube, for it's just an amazing historical document.
Maybe producer Tom can have that playing underneath, maybe, yeah. The Chaz and Dave year end in one song through this bit, through the whole podcast actually.
It's lucky for Spurs when the year ends in one. They first won the cup when the century began.
It's really good if that's your sort of thing. And of course in 2000...
That's quite a big caveat, I think.
If cup final songs is your preferred genre of music.
And as James said, you know, going into 2001, people thought the same thing would happen and it didn't. And then, of course, in 2011, it didn't either. But this does feel like this year is Spurs' best chance to, you know, to get that, you know, to get back in on track with that trend like they used to be.
Yeah. And this was something, Jack, you and I looked at in a piece that ran just after Christmas, was the history. And you know, I think we made the point, you know, that it might feel a bit hackneyed now in the, you know, when it's probably a more cynical, data-driven age, but this was a really important and is an important part of Tottenham's heritage. And it's funny, like, you know, Mourinho may be seen as not a kind of classic Spurs manager in some senses, but this is, you know, this would be such a great nod to that history. And does feel like they've got a really, really good chance. Mourinho's record in finals is superb. As James says, they've beaten whoever they'll play in the final. They've beaten them already this season. So, yeah, let's not get too carried away with the year ends in one stuff, but it does feel like a nice additional omen to also the more serious data-driven facts, which are just Spurs are a really good team and would have a very good chance against whoever they play.
Completely. Well, that's all we've got time for on this week's emergency special podcast. We will be back at the start of next week, where we'll be looking back on the Marine game, where I think, imagine Spurs play a very different team, but hopefully get a similar result. Thanks again to Charlie and James. Thank you to producer Tom. And thank you to everyone who sent us in players who played for Brentford and Tottenham. My favourite one was Cyril Toulouse, sent to me by Stanley. Stanley, thank you so much for your message. Cyril Toulouse, I'd never heard of him, but he's now on our list.